The opinions expressed on the ACB Media Network are those of the content providers and should not be viewed as an endorsement of any product or service. Nor does it reflect the views of the American Council of the Blind, its elected officials, or its staff.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Doug Powell, president of the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss. And we're here with Danette Dixon, who is our program chair. And we are still waiting for Claire Stanley to come on. She's the director of advocacy and government affairs, and she is going to be talking to us about the imperatives that we have this year, the ACB's imperatives that we're bringing to Congress. And it's kind of second verse, same as the first. We have the same imperatives actually that we have from last year. So it'll be a review of those imperatives. And then she was also going to be talking to us about updates to the Social Security Act. So do we have Claire yet?
No, sir.
Okay. So let's start with the imperatives.
Excuse me, Doug. I just heard from Claire. She's just asking me to send the link. So I'll do that real fast.
Okay, very good. But I'll start in with the first imperative, which is the Software and Application Accessibility Act. And this is something that we've been pushing for to make sure that, a lot of the apps and a lot of the training that takes place, training modules that are sent out for employment and that kind of thing, are done by third parties. And so up to now, they really haven't been responsible for making sure that that these things are accessible. And so that's the big thing for me. I know even as I teach Tai Chi at the local recreation center, and there are some mandatory trainings that I've had to take part in that I actually have to go in and do with my boss, my supervisor, because they are not accessible. And I also know that there are some well-meaning people who have bought the overlays. They bought overlays and are trying to make things accessible by these overlays, which are not really making the websites and the applications accessible. So what we're going for this year, as is last year, is to make these make software and applications accessible to us, but also making sure that the, as I said, the third parties that do a lot of the applications and the training modules and that kind of thing are responsible for making their trainings accessible to us as well.
So Doug, Claire is here now.
Yeah. Okay, good. So that's, Claire, I've just started with the first imperative, and I don't know if you want to fill in anything more on the Software Accessibility Act.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm a couple minutes late. I couldn't find the Zoom link, but I am here. For the Website and Software Applications Accessibility Act, sounds like you covered most of it. Just know that it hasn't been introduced in the Senate yet, and we are working vigorously to get it so any or all help on Hill Day this year, especially on the Senate side, will be really beneficial to try to get that across the line and get it reintroduced.
Cool.
Yeah. So
you want to take over, or you want me to?
Sure, however you guys would like it. Would you like me to just jump in?
Sure. Awesome. If you're ready.
Awesome. Yeah. So you guys want me to do the imperatives first then, not social security stuff?
Well, I didn't know about the Social Security stuff, so I started with the imperative.
Perfect. I just want to make sure I am all doing what you guys would like. So perfect. Yeah. So that's the website and Software Applications Accessibility Act, which is what I'm really passionate about. Actually, I think all of us know what it's like to deal with inaccessible websites and apps. And I'll start before I go into the other two. I will say one thing we're trying to do for anybody who's coming to Hill Day. Is that in addition to letting all the state affiliates make their own meetings with their representatives and senators, we have gone through and found all the members of the committees that the imperatives have been assigned to, so like energy and commerce, and we are attempting to make meetings with those offices. We haven't quite gotten all of them, but we've actually made a pretty good dent. I think our intern who's doing them says we have something like 20 meetings scheduled. And so with that, if anybody's coming in person, in addition to your own state meetings that you're going to, we're looking for volunteers to go to the other ones. So Scott Thornhill and I don't have to do all 20 meetings. We would love anybody's help. So just know we're pushing hard for the imperatives on Hill Day. And so we'll be doing that. So the second imperative that I'll talk about is the Medical Devices Non-Visual Act. And this bill has to do with medical equipment we can now use at home. I always say I'm amazed by the type of devices we can use at home that even 5-10 years ago we couldn't have used. You know, even things like chemotherapy dispensers or kidney dialysis machines. But no surprise to any of us who are blind or low vision, most of them, if not all of them, aren't designed to be accessible. So they have screens with print, no large print, no audio output, total touch screens with no physical buttons. And so NFB has actually been a pusher behind this bill. And basically what the bill says is that for new, so we're not asking them to go back retroactively, but for new devices that pass through the Food and Drug Administration, they will have to develop a set of policies to make or regulations to make these devices accessible. So things like audio output, large print. And I always tell people, we know the technology is available. You know, we do it with our smartphone in our hand every day. So the technology is totally doable. It's just a matter of making regulations that bake that accessibility right into it. So I'm excited about that bill. It was reintroduced in the House this past fall, but also not in the Senate. So again, really need to get on the Senate this year, you guys. And then the office who reintroduced it in the House, Schakowsky, rumor is she's retiring. So hopefully it won't be a problem. Hopefully it'll pass and all will be well in the world. But if we do have to get it reintroduced in the next session, we also need to work on a new lead in the House, because if Schakowsky does retire, then our champion will be gone. So working on that one as well. And then our third one is the Communications and Video Technology Accessibility Act, or the CVTA. Many of us are familiar with the CVAA. ACB played a big role in getting this passed back in 2010. And this really came about when smartphones became popular, when technology just started to really evolve. The CVAA from 2010 did a lot of things, but for our community, I think some of the most notable things, in addition to making sure that we have, you know, accessibility on our smartphones, had to do with audio description on television. But it requires so many hours of audio described content on the three major broadcast networks, as well as the top five most commonly watched cable stations, according to the Nielsen measurement. Most of us don't watch television that way anymore. They call it cutting the cord. And so most of us now are using Hulu, Netflix, insert 10 more, you know, platforms here. And so this bill, in addition to a lot of other things, is just calling for the CVAA to just really catch up with where we are. I've worked with an attorney who's worked in the deaf community for a long time, and she said many times, yeah, we're probably going to have to keep updating this every 15, 20 years because technology just constantly evolves, which part of me wants to cover my ears and say, no, no, no. but the reality is it probably is true, because as technology evolves, we just don't know what we're going to have. But all that to say, this would just kind of catch up with the times. There's also some language in it about video conferencing, so like Zoom that we're using now, which is actually very appropriate because as we all saw during COVID, that technology, that form of technology just boomed. And we all know, for instance, most of us in the Lion community love Zoom, but other platforms that shall not be named are not wonderful at all. And so some of the policies in this would help to require accessibility across the board as well for video conferencing. This one has not been introduced in the House or the Senate. We've been working really closely with Senator Markey's office from Massachusetts, as well as Representative Dingell. Markey is, I'm holding up my hand as if people could see it, this close to introducing it. But we've just been stalled because we're trying really hard to get a Republican co-lead and just trying to iron the language out just right. But we've worked very closely with industry because when you're dealing with this, industry folk are the people you need to get on your side. So we've literally had meetings with Amazon and Verizon and Microsoft, and all of them have said, not if they'll support it, at least they will not publicly work against it, which is all you can ask for sometimes. So some of them have gone as far as to say they might publicly support it. So we're in a good place. And so again, we're just working really hard to try to get Republican co-sponsors. But I was just having a conversation with someone today, and we said we're finally getting to that point where we're trying to decide if we can't get the Republicans, do we just go ahead and introduce it? And I think we have to make that decision sooner than later. So, but we do have someone on both the House and Senate side to introduce that bill. Just excited for everybody to go to Congress and support those bills because, again, they don't have bill numbers yet, but they will very soon because they're right there on the beginning of being introduced. So Claire, those are the three imperatives.
Yeah. Claire, does it also increase the number of hours of audio description?
Yes. Yes. Thank you. That's the other thing I've been telling people. I never quite understood the formula under the CVAA, but the formula under the CVAA was that we got 87.5 hours of audio-derived content per every 3 months or every quarter. So if you do the real rough math, that's about an hour of content a day. And I always tell people, I don't know about you, but I watch a lot more than 1 hour of television a day. And that's only on the three network broadcast network stations and the five top cable. So that's not even an hour of all television. That's just an hour a day of what's out there. So yes, that's exactly right, Doug. This is also pushing for more. I always tell people, you know, it's kind of like under the CVAA because it was the first time. Maybe I'm just making assumptions here, but I think we were like, okay, 87.5 hours. Awesome. We don't have anything. But now all these years later, when we see that more audio described content is out there, we're kind of like, okay, you got to give us more. And so yes, this indeed is calling for more as well.
Cool.
So we have the summaries of the imperatives are all up on the website, both available in English and in Spanish. And then we have a one pager. So all the other ones have their own separate summaries, but then we take all three and we smush them down into a smaller description that's all on one page, and we print it out on cardstock. So if you're coming to Capitol Hill, you can take those to pass them out. If you're doing Zoom Hill visits or you just want to pass them out to other people, we have that as well electronically. So you can just pass that out as well electronically. So we have it, you know, all kinds of literature so that people can reach out. And then starting tomorrow, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night, I'll be doing a community call on everything I just talked about, but in even more detail. And once again, we're doing community calls on each imperative one night a week so that people can listen to them. So
is this still available on Media Night?
Are the community calls that we're doing?
No, the imperatives, are they still available on Media
Yes.
Night?
I believe okay. So. I would have to double check with Rick, but I believe that's where he put them. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, those are the imperatives. I did have some research because initially Danette had said something about Social Security. I don't know if that's still something you guys are interested in. I can read through my notes or if you just wanted to focus on the imperatives.
Let's take the Doug, do you want to take the some questions now and then go into Social Security?
Sure.
Okay.
And I heard
any questions, please raise your hand and Sheila will call on you.
There's two.
Karen.
Okay. For Claire's benefit, Schakowsky is retiring. There's about a 9-way race to replace her.
Oof. Wow.
So, yes, she is retiring.
Thanks, Karen. We were pretty sure that was the case, but I didn't want to sound too confident, but that's what we thought. Thank you.
You're quite welcome, and we will not be in DC this year, but if we can get any virtual meeting, we will try to get virtual meetings because I know Duckworth's office is going to be important.
Yes. Thank you, Karen. And on that topic, if people want help making meetings, whether they're in person or virtual, if you want a draft template on how to write the email, I can help you with that. If you want email addresses to the offices, we can get those to you. So however we can assist, don't let, you know, think, oh, I don't have something, I don't know how to do it. Nope, we can assist in any way you guys would like.
Thank you very much.
Sheila, I think there was another question. Yes.
No. They lowered their hand.
Okay. Any other questions about the imperatives?
No hands.
Let's move on to Social Security then, Claire, please.
Sure. So Danette had reached out last month and asked about just Social Security changes in 2026, because every year they change. And so I looked up some stuff. I don't have a ton of information, but I just found some of the basic changes for 2026. So I'll go through those with you. I just wanted to start by first saying, I shouldn't assume, but I think what a lot of people were worried about has to do with some of the changes with the One Big Beautiful Bill and the impacts that would have. But most of that is for Medicaid, not Medicare. So a lot of the things like having to report your wages and what have you come through that. So just know that if you have any questions about that, I'm happy to talk offline about that. But most of that is Medicaid, not Medicare. So that's not, obviously there are people in our community that it apply to, but not as widely. So for Social Security for 2026, the cost of living went up 2.8%. But however, a lot of people have said that's not a lot, that's not going to cost the overall COLA of life in general. So we'll see what happens with that. On average, this is a $56 a month increase for Social Security recipients. And it applies to all the different benefits, so survivor benefits, retirement benefits, and things like that. However, there were also a hike in Medicare premiums. So as I was reading this online, they were basically saying, yeah, you get more money in Social Security, and then you're just going to pay for your premiums with it. So that's happy.
what you gain at the bunghole, you lose at the spigot.
Basically. So they're saying that's payments for Part B for Medicare, which is basically what covers your doctor's appointments. That's what's going up. What else do we have?
I heard something that somebody was saying that we're not going to that Medicaid. I'm sorry, that Social Security was not taxable this
year. Yes, I have that in my notes. Yes.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, I'll get to that in a second.
That's a biggie.
I was about to say I'll find that, but then I'll scroll down and then I'll lose my spot. But yes, I do have some notes on it.
Okay.
That.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Yes. One thing that I thought, and this might be been going on for a few years now, but it was the first time I had seen it closely, so I've seen it in my notes, is the age at which you can require, or the age at which you can retire is going up. So it's not just flat 65 anymore, depending on the year you're born. I want to say starting in the 40s, every couple of months it goes up. So for instance, 40s and 50s, it's upwards. It starts when you're 66 and then goes up a couple months and goes up a couple months up to 67. So the retirement age is definitely changing. As I was reading that, I thought, well, at my age, that means I won't be able to retire till I'm 80. So that is going up as well. The substantial gainful activity, or SGA, which a lot of us know about for SSDI recipients, and that impacts how much you can work and gain before you're penalized and stop losing some of your SSDI benefits. That's gone up about $70. It is a higher amount for people with quote unquote general disabilities, and not as impactful for those of us who are blind. You guys know the history of Social Security legislation. They did some great advocacy for the blind community. So although we are impacted, a lot of times the cuts aren't quite as painful for us. So thank you to the advocates who did work for us in that respect. Okay, so here are my notes. I have the information about the Social Security taxes. There will be a deduction in the benefits that are taxed. It's up to up to $6,000 more. So basically, if you are 65 at the end of 2025, so again, it depends on your age, but if you're 65 at the end of 2025, this amount comes into play. And then again, it's that every 2 months or so it changes. And it basically says that you're not charged taxes on your retirement benefit for another $6,000. And I believe the cap was $184,000. So once you hit that, then you're no longer taxed anymore. So it's a higher threshold. You'll still be taxed for things like Medicare, but not for Social Security benefits, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Yep. I think those were the main things I found online for you guys. So hopefully that was helpful about Social Security and what's going on in 2026. Are there any questions on what I talked about?
Yeah, I heard
you have hands. Yes.
Okay.
Sharon.
Hi, Claire. Sharon Strakowski here.
Yeah.
You know, I noticed this year, normally I get my information from Social Security by the end of January.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't coming, and I was getting nervous. And I ended up calling my local office, and they said, oh, we can send it, as if they were doing me a favor. But then a couple of days later, I got information from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So I think, I don't know that they had anything to do with that. But
yeah.
I just wondered if you've heard about other people having delays and whether that might be because of the shortage of staff right now.
You're the first person who'd said that, but I think your guess about staff is very possible. I'm going to take note of that, and everybody else who's on here listening and stuff, let me know, because if that becomes a pattern or practice, that's definitely something we can yell at them about, because that's really interesting to hear. But no, you're the first person I've heard.
And the other thing is that I've been getting a lot of emails that I think are scam. Saying they're from Social Security. Go online to look at your statement. And when I haven't, of course, clicked on those links, but when I have gone onto my Social Security, there hasn't been anything there. So I just wanted to pass that on. I don't know.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, who got them? But one of them, the word social in the email was actually spelled incorrectly.
That's how you always know.
A red flag.
Go and read, which I know with JAWS can be a pain in the butt to have to go up to the line of the email, but check the email address, because it usually will give itself away if you go letter by letter.
Thank you.
If anything, also keep us posted. We had been hearing all through last year several of the different websites they're using for different benefit programs, not surprisingly, are having the traditional problems we always hear about, difficulty logging in, and the security processes they now make you use are like so inaccessible. Things like taking a screenshot of your face or things like that, that are just inaccessible. So if anybody's having those with any of the Social Security or other benefit government websites, let us know. It's something Colby and I have kind of flagged as something that we might need to be looking at. Sorry, if there were other questions. Yeah.
You do. You've only got one right now. Lori.
Hello. I just wanted to mention that the big, beautiful bill has eliminated the age requirement for the Medicaid buy-in program.
Okay.
So in states that have nice income guidelines for the Medicaid buy-in program, you know, I do know of cases where people would say, oh, well, you know, I'm going to turn 65 and I don't want to lose my Medicaid, so I'm going to have to stop working because I'll lose it based on my earnings. The Medicaid buy-in now is an option because the age restriction has been eliminated.
Okay.
And to add to what was mentioned about the reduction of Social Security employees, yes, everybody that was, I won't say everybody, most of the people that were hired over the last 2.5 to 3 years are gone. And then a lot of people took the buyout that they did. You know, so you lost a lot of people with institutional knowledge.
Yeah. That's really helpful. Thanks, Lori.
All right. Sure.
Dan.
Okay, I don't quite understand this $6,000 deduction. I wonder if you could clarify that relating to Social Security. I'm 76, of course, and apparently does this only apply to people who were 65 in 2025?
65 or older and starting in 25. So you would be past that. So you would be fine. and it just, it's how much you bring in with all of your benefits. So if you, once you hit bringing in $184,000 a year, you will hit that cap and they won't be able to tax any more of your Social Security benefits.
Okay. So the bottom line is if you're below 184,000, they can tax, but if you're at 184,000 and above, then yes, they cannot tax. Yeah. Is that correct?
That's how I understood it. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I think there's some deduction for SSDI, you know, for, yeah, Social Security payments. My understanding is that it is that there are increasing the deduction.
Yes.
That will not be taxed, and so that reduces the amount that is taxable.
Yes, I think Doug said that more eloquently than me. Thank you.
Does that make sense, Dan?
Yes, but how much are they increasing the deduction?
Well, that's what Claire was saying about $6,000.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Okay. Thank you.
I mean, that's the taxable income. You know, that's the income that you get from Social Security. So it's a decrease in the income from Social Security on which you will be taxed.
So right,
it's not a credit of $6,000 off your taxes, but it's a decrease in the amount of taxable income of $6,000.
Yeah.
It's an increase.
In the deduction, yes.
Okay.
Increase in the deduction, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
This always reminds me why I never went into
be an auditor
to tax law.
We don't have any other questions right now. Claire, do you know where the Older Americans Act is at this point?
That is a great question. The short answer is no. Okay. The longer answer is no, and it has gone quiet. Usually we get a good, you know, you hear, you know, rumors and stuff of what's going on, and I've heard nothing. So okay. That always makes me a little nervous. Yeah.
Yeah. Attention is elsewhere.
Yeah.
So that was a reauthorization that was supposed to happen last fall.
Yeah.
And has not yet happened.
Yeah, exactly. It just keeps getting pushed back and back.
Yeah, and there have been language changes in the language of the act, but not, but it hasn't been approved yet, I guess. So we're still under the old language.
Yes, exactly. Any other questions?
The other thing that I heard recently, and Claire, you probably know about this too. There is an interagency council that the Administration for Community Living put together that gathered a lot of people from different, like housing and health and all that kind of stuff. And they were doing a framework for a national plan on aging. And at the last minute, a woman by the name of Nikki Jeffords from the Rehab Services Administration. She was the representative from the OIB program, the Older Independent Blind Program, was named to that interagency council.
Yes.
And I was really excited about that. And then when last January, ACL was lost in the shuffle for a while.
Yep.
Apparently they've found a home, and Nikki has been renamed to that interagency council, and it's been approved by the RSA. So that's exciting to me, because from if people are developing a national plan on aging, I always use the example of a hotel room, an accessible hotel room. And, they've got nice wide aisles for for the wheelchairs, and they've got roll-in showers and all that kind of stuff, but they don't have Braille on the lotion
then,
bottles.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
they don't have an accessible thermostat and, stuff like that. So having somebody like Nikki at the table, when they're talking about a national plan on aging, I think it's going to help us in terms of, broadening the awareness of accessibility issues.
And you know what? I think Nikki deserves like angel wings, because I consider her a friend and I follow her on social media. And with all the government shutdowns and the reshifting of the government, I think it was twice that she essentially didn't have a job. It was like twice that she was like, well, I'm not employed by the federal government anymore. And then be like, just kidding. And so how she has not had a stroke is beyond me. But yes, I stay in contact with her. So if for when, or I'll keep you guys posted on what's going on there. So
perfect.
You do have a hand. Stacey, go ahead. Stacey, there you go.
Okay. Has anybody considered, I'm worried about the legislators discontinuing both Medicaid and Medi-Cal and in my state, and or Social Security outright. They keep threatening it every so often and threatening it. And what provisions can we hope for if these things do happen? How are we going to survive?
I think that's a very big and hard question. There's definitely been threats to Medicaid and Medi-Cal in your state. That gets really hard because that gets, down to the state level and even more specific. So that's when, we'd encourage you to do advocacy at your state level. But as far as, the changes, they constantly threaten it based on what we're seeing, for instance, with these changes that came out. I would be less worried about anything significant happening in 2026. Now, of course, that's very short-sighted. What'll happen in 27 and onward, I don't know. But I feel like the threats that we've heard, I don't see anything happening at our door right this moment. But I mean, it's totally fair to be concerned. You're always looking forward because we do constantly hear things. So I don't have a good answer, but to advocate at your state level, and we'll, keep our ear to the ground for what's changing. So
I know nobody has any plans for any funds being raised for that kind of thing, and that's worrying. I think there should be funds being raised, plans being made, things like that.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm concerned that funds are not being raised for such that's an fair. Event.
That's fair. Yeah.
And you'll notice that that's why the retirement age is rising.
Yeah.
And the deductions, you know, the tax deductions are rising. You know, you have to be older in order to be eligible for some of these things. And that's why, because they're concerned that the money's going to run out at some point. And so, you know, your concern is valid.
Yeah.
And I have to think that with the number of people who are eligible for these, you know, for these programs, that something will be done. You know,
I hope so.
It's not only blind people. You know,
it's everybody.
You know, yeah. It's everybody, and yeah. Americans are getting older. You know, I mean, you know, are living older, and the average age of Americans, you know, is getting older. So, it has to be addressed at some point. Because you know, too many people are in the same situation you're in, Stacy, and I'm in, that, you know, a part of our income is based on Social Security.
All of my income. All of my income.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have a way to go back at this point.
I hear
in
you.
I'm not healthy enough to do that. And there are very big reasons why not.
And you're not alone. It's a lot of people. Yeah, it's a big population of the U.S. Yeah.
And nobody's doing anything about it. I don't see anybody trying to raise funds, you know, in other ways to do anything about it.
Yes. And everybody threatens to stop, you know, Social Security and Medicare and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's I have to think it's empty threats, because there are too many people who would be affected by a big change like that.
Yeah, I think I agree with Doug. I hope it's just empty threats. Yeah.
We don't have any other hands at this time.
Well, if that's all the questions, I'm going to sneak off, because we actually are going to go and check out the African American History Museum in preparations for our event in DC Leadership. So,
thank you. Thank you, Claire.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming, Claire. Yep.
Talk to you guys soon. Bye.
All right.
Thank you. All right.
All right. So this is Doug. And do you have any questions about? I hear a hand up. Any questions about the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, or, you know, some of the things that we're pursuing? We'll take your question.
Does anybody have any questions about anything we discussed today? We still have 20 minutes. So.
Right.
Sharon, go ahead.
Actually, this isn't about what we discussed today, but while this call has been going on, I had a call from Jean Mann, and I told her that I was on an AVL call, and she asked to be remembered to everybody because she's in a rehab right now. She had a really bad break of an ankle. Oh. And she said, "I want to get out of here." she's feisty as always, but she just wanted to say hello. And so I just wanted to pass that on. Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
Mary.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Just, I'm not quite sure where I've heard it, but I've heard just recently within the last couple of days is that like a 70% of people who are retired are going back to work.
Wow.
I don't know whether it's you know, I'm probably not full time, but you know, part time for, mm-hmm. you know, for just supplementing their income or just, you know, keeping the, you know, because the cost of living is so, you know, much more expensive and all that. So
it's probably also partly to keep the brain cells working, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
That's a huge number though. That I had not heard that.
That's what I've heard. Now I don't quite know where I've heard that. I don't know whether it was just on the radio or mm-hmm. what, but
interesting.
Just heard that. I just remember that statistic standing out.
Yeah, that is an outstanding figure for sure.
Yeah,
it is.
All right. Thanks, Mary.
Dania, go ahead.
You know, I wonder if anybody's heard anything about the accommodations and hardships on the low vision and blind for this new Save Act proposal, considering that it may require each of us to re-register with a birth certificate or passport. Has anyone heard any conversations about any accommodation provisions in that act?
No. Did I hear that they've been trying to pull back on absentee ballots and mail-in ballots and all that kind of stuff. And I actually do think I heard at some point that people who are, you know, blind, low vision and print disabled were still going to be able to do, you know, still going to be able to do absentee balloting. But there, it's just, well, never mind. I'm not going to get political here. I don't know how far that can go, I guess.
It's going to go before the Senate, but since the House passed it, I wonder if they took in consideration to include in the language any accommodations, or they're just going to assume ADA is going to cover it.
Somewhere I think I remember hearing that accommodation, you know, that blind and low vision people were still going to be able to do absentee balloting. So, but, you know, I don't know what, you know, I haven't read the bill myself, so I'm not positive, but it seems to me that I did hear that.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Tanya. Any other hands?
Karen.
Okay. With reference to that SAVE Act, which I hope does not pass the Senate, a lot of people would be disenfranchised, the way I understand that, because you would have to have a birth certificate. It would have to match. So women would be affected. People who cannot easily get documents would be affected. It's not a good piece of legislation. I'll keep it at that.
Thanks, Karen.
You're welcome.
Well, I know for me, I have to be able to find and identify my birth certificate with vision problems.
Yes. Yep.
Yep.
That's all your hands.
Okay.
Right. Since there's no other hands, anybody have any questions about Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, which is a special interest affiliate, for ACB, if you didn't know?
We are, we're currently working more at the state and local level. Anicio Correa, our vice president and chair of the advocacy committee, has been spearheading a program for us as members of AAVL and also ACB to contact their local area agency on aging or senior center or aging and disability resource center to have them come and talk to our chapters about the programs and services that are available to us at the local level, but then also ask if we can come to the come to the AAA come to the agency and do a little thing on how to make things accessible for people who are blind or low vision. And then with the ultimate hope that one of our local members could be named to the advisory council so that they could have ongoing input into the programs and services and make sure that they are accessible and make sure they're reaching out to people who need it. It always drives me crazy that the the big data project, which is only a few years old, said that we were only reaching 5% of the people who are eligible for vision rehab services. So 5%, 95% of people who are losing their vision and are eligible for rehab services are getting those services. So 95% are not getting those services, sorry. 5% are. So, if you're interested, we'd love to have you, work with us to talk to those local agencies and maybe even at the state level to get on advisory councils to make sure that we're doing outreach to the people who need it. Obviously, the people who need it most are the more rural, are the more disadvantaged, economically disadvantaged, and that kind of thing. So trying to get to them and also, I was on a phone call this week, by the way, with with someone from Michigan who is actually got a program to contact their local eye care professionals to make sure that they know how to refer people to services for people who are blind or low vision. And I'm hoping that I can get in touch with the people in Michigan to find out what they're doing, how effective it is, and whether we can, what we can do to do the same thing in other states. Because I really think that's an important piece of outreach is to make sure that the eye care professionals will steer people who are, who are losing their vision to the vision rehab services that they need. And I think I heard a hand go up, right, Sheila?
Yeah, Tanya?
You know, I meant to share with my community that I found my insulin on the Trump RX website. My understanding is that they launched the Trump RX website about, maybe at least a week ago. But I also found out, despite my disability, I am not eligible to buy my insulin cheaper on the Trump RX website because I have group insurance through my retirement plan. So I just thought I'd share with you guys, check out that Trump RX website.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay.
All right. And
any other questions or comments?
Oops. Aaron? All I will say about that Trump RX site, be careful.
Okay, thank you.
It's amazing he convinced E.I. Lilly and Novadis to drop those prices like that.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll see if they really drop and stuff. All I will say is be careful. I'm not going to get too political here. Just be careful.
Thank you.
Right.
It's about 12 minutes till, and no other hands, I don't think.
No, ma'am.
Oh, no hands. Okay. We could stop early and...
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea. I thank you, all, everybody, for coming, and those who commented, yes. Thank you very much. We are, and if you are not a member of the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, you can go to www.aavl-blind-seniors.org. And you can find out more about us, and you can also register or renew your membership. Obviously, we're in the membership drive season, so we'd love to have you join us, and you can find out all of the other programs and services that we have on that website.
All right.
Very good.
Yes.
Thank you, Sheila. Thank you,
everybody.
Diane.
And we will be back on the fourth Monday next week. Next month. Next week.